Blog Talk Radio.
Idea what it's like to drink a half a bottle of ketchup, thinking it was a bottle of 1946 Chateau Neuf de Pape.
Hello and welcome to episode 12 of Bizarro UK. We've got a very special guest tonight with Mr. Austin Chambers, and you have to excuse my voice. It's been a very tumultuous week, done a lot of shouting and screaming and crying and laughing and taking its toll. We're here with Austin Chambers, who writes under the name AS Chambers, not to be confused with ASS Chambers, who writes something completely different. Hello, Mr. Austin Chambers.
Hello, Mr. Adam Miller.
There we go. Nice and loud and clear. We had a few problems just beforehand trying to figure out Skype. Turns out that neither of us are really very good with technology. And it's always a bit panicky the first 5 minutes before a show, but we got there, and we're both here now. And I want to ask Mr. Chambers to just give us a little elevator pitch, styly introduction about himself, if you will, please.
Right, so basically, I'm a Lancaster-based author of urban fantasy and dark horror. I've been writing since, like most of us have, since we were like kids, doing things on the back tag packets, which is for my parents. And then, like a few years ago, I finally decided to pull my finger out and get myself published. So my main character inside the universe which I'm creating is a chap by the name of Sam Spallucci, and he's a fictional investigator of paranormal in an alternate version of my Lancaster. It's sort of like film noir meets Douglas Adams and The Exorcist. You've got the dark horror in there, but you've got nice sort of like shades of light as well. So a good chuckle while you're having a good whimper from fear. And it seems to be going down well, so I can't grumble.
Great stuff. Spallucci, I mean, it's very much like hard-boiled, he's whiskey drinking, you know. Have you always been a fan of that kind of fiction, the detective style, you know, anti-hero?
Definitely. I mean, I grew up on like a diet of Mickey and Mike Hammer in the 1980s. I just love that programme. I love the hat, the coat, the whole sort of like voice to the audience sort of thing. I love that in a monologue where you actually get to know your hero and know what he's thinking. But then, of course, they're not all sort of like roses and lightness. They've got that dark in there as well because of humour.
Yeah.
And human failings, and those failings are what we do. And I really like exploring that. I don't do sort of like all black and white. I have my own sort of like 50 shades of grey in the middle, but none of them normally includes bondage. Although, having said that, I am writing about a bondage-loving banshee at the moment, so there's probably a little bit in there.
Bondage-loving banshee.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. There's not enough of that. There's not.
Definitely. Banshees, that's what I
said. A little bit earlier, about when you first started getting into the writing game. How did that come about? When did you first realise, you know, this is something that I want to do and I want to do it well?
I mean, I've always had a fairly overactive imagination. I was a single kid, older parents, left to my own devices. So like, I was there with the action men, you know, sort of like in sort of like before I was about 10 or whatever. And so like, having them doing their adventures. And it's all led from that, really. I decided that I wanted to just like create my own adventures. So I was the kid on the playground saying, right, this is what we're playing. This is my story. And really narked when people wanted to go off and do their own stories. So that led to me then saying, well, forget the rest of you. I'm just going to write this stuff down. And as sort of like you evolve, you know, it's like your reading progresses. I got into Dracula's first horror story I really read, and then sort of Cycle of the Werewolf by Stephen King, because I liked short books. I couldn't be bothered with reading big books back then, a short attention span. And it sort of developed from that. A little bit of Anne Rice came in, and sort of like more sort of other things. I started looking at detective stories, like I say, Douglas Adams. The Exorcist was a great influence on what I was reading when I sort of went away to university, when I started getting into more mythology. And that was this sort of big mishmash, all sort of blended together. You had demons, angels, vampires, werewolves. And then it sort of stopped when I sort of like basically got married and settled down and started working 9 to 5 and all that sort of business. But as things progressed, I came back to it when I was sort of, what are we now? How old am I now? 44. I came back to it about, I always forget that. Came back to it about 4 or 5 years ago and said, well, no, look, this stuff's still up there bouncing around. So I went back and started penning things out and looked at old stuff I'd written. And I said, well, yeah, some of that's good. And some of that said, oh, my dear Lord, no, we're not using that. And reworked stuff. And, yeah, and Sam Spolucci really started to evolve from that, because he wasn't the first thing I wrote. The first thing I wrote was this book called Fallen Angel about the angel of Adam being thrown out of heaven after he was framed, and leading up to this event where he's going to end going back into heaven and all this sort of thing. Very, very apocalyptic, bit pretentious, but all good fun. And I'll come back to that later when I've sort of like done all my Sam Spolucci stuff. Put that to one side and then came back to Sam. And he's great because he's a fantastic character. He's down to earth, day to day, hasn't got a clue what's going on in life. And then all this stuff just keeps getting thrown in, sort of like, you know, I'll say bondage loving banshees.
Not to mention werewolves and vampires and everything paranormal.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing about urban fantasy. You can keep returning to that same character, like a, you know, slipping into it like a warm pair of slippers and coming up with new stuff. So how do you go about writing? What's your process like? Is it pretty much a sit down and just bash the keys, or do you plan and like really plot so that you know what you're going to do?
I have an overall plan. I always start with the end. I know how things are going to finish. It's like the books I'm working on. They're all part of this sort of expanded universe. It's got Sam in the middle. The short stories coming off, and then I'm going to sort of draw Sam sort of vaguely to a close and expand into, go beyond that into what I call the divergence and divergent lands.
Yeah.
But I know that whole universe is actually going to finish. I actually have the short story written, which finishes absolutely everything. And I plan on the big scale like that, but also plan on the small scale. When I write my Sam Spolucci books, I know what the last scene is going to be. I haven't got a clue how I'm going to get there. Not fun, you know. If I knew exactly what I was doing, that'd be very boring. And sometimes I write short stories like that just so I get them out of my head because I know what I'm doing. And I find them quite tedious because I feel it's formulaic. And so I put them to one side and then rework them to jazz them up a bit. Because if I'm more interested, other people might be more interested. I feel if I'm bored with a story, then other people are going to be bored with a story. But if I always have that idea of where I want to finish, because I know what the next story is going to be. And so like with Sam, there's going to be about 10 books in total, I reckon, before I move on to like the next phase in this moving on to the divergence and divergent lands. I mean, other stuff like comes in, I plan around that, you know, I have a little sort of like skeleton what I'm doing. But as far as actual scenes are concerned, I just like sit down and say, right, this is where I'm going, this is what happens. And today, it normally works.
Sometimes you have to reel yourself back in a little bit and just what's quite different about Sam Spolucci's world is it's set in your hometown of Lancaster. Which is, you know, I mean, most urban fantasy, if from a UK point of view, everyone always goes to London. Everyone goes, you know, always. Why would you do Lancaster? Is it something that, you know, just because you know it so well, or just, you know, to be to jump on the old London bandwagon.
Yeah, I think it goes back to something I read King wrote. I think it was in the Dance Macabre book. It's non-fiction. I said, write about what you know.
Yeah.
You know, don't try and make something up, because someone's going to turn and say, no, it's not like that.
Yeah.
And Lancaster's a brilliant place. I mean, you're coming up in a couple of weeks and you'll see it's just cool. It's steeped in these shadows. You've got all the alleys coming off. You've got castles. You've got a priory. You've got a cathedral. You've got this huge Williamson Park with the Ashton Memorial at the back, just sort of like dominating it when you drive past on the motorway. There's so much stuff. And you've got all the history. You've got the witches and everything like that. It's just ripe. And like you say, the places like London and all the big cities, they've been done to death. So I wanted to do sort of like a little bit of like a, almost like Inspector Morse with vampires for Lancaster. You know, you have that sort of like detective thing going on, but using the fantasy side. And it's working. I'm really, really enjoying it. I'm not running out of material at all, because there's just so much there. And Lancaster's full of characters. You've got people in the streets like wandering around that you'll see on a day-to-day basis, and you just think, yeah, you've got a real backstory there.
Yeah.
You know, from the guy who sells burgers on the street corner to sort of like the evangelical who is there on Saturday morning with their placards saying, Jesus save our souls and things like that. They think, yeah, you know, they are just great. I can use those, and I do.
Excellent answer. It works so much better for Lancaster, as in, if I was to do it and it was set in Wolverhampton, it wouldn't quite have the same, you know, romance. It would be generally just spitting chavs and
chavalash.
Yes, exactly. People dropping kebabs. I mean, how can you make an urban fantasy out of that, unless you made a kebab haunted. It doesn't have the same sort of thing. Plus, the language would be completely different. It would be terrible. Or Yama werewolf. Oh, no. definitely not. So, it's either Lancaster or urban fantasy. As well as some Spelunky novels, you've got some collections out. Oh, Taste and See, and All Things Dark and Dangerous. Which do you find easier, the shorter work or your longer stuff, like the Sam Spelunky novel?
I find it work quicker.
Yeah.
Oh, Taste and See was effectively written in a week. I had a few short stories kicking around which I reused and cannibalised, and some I just sat down and went. The story behind it was I was really behind in writing Sam Spelunky Ghost from the Past. I was supposed to be ready for last year's sci-fi weekend, but we had a horrendous Christmas. Things just went completely pear-shaped and it didn't get finished.
Yeah.
And I was there, so like a month before this, thinking, I've got one book. It's the same book I had last year. I need another book. So, right, fine, let's sort it. I just sat down, grabbed a couple of shorts which I already had, made sure they're finished and polished, and then wrote up about six, seven more. And I really enjoyed it. I found it quite sort of like refreshing, just having this sort of like thing which wasn't the norm. It wasn't the thing which I'm normally working on. So now I'm in the habit of doing a Sam Spelunky book, then a little short story collection as well.
Yeah.
And the short stories, I can either have sort of like little standalones, or I can explore the expanded universe of Sam. It's like at the moment I'm working on a six-part trilogy, sort of. It's a trilogy in sort of like two stories each time, if you catch my drift.
Yes.
Vampires. I've got Nightingale and I've got Justice. Justice being this sort of Sergio Leone vampire. He's a gunslinger with teeth.
Oh.
And Nightingale being the sort of like very modern vampire who's in the case of the Vex Vampire in Casebook. And I'm working through two stories of each of those. There's two in Otace and Sea, two in Dark and Dangerous, and there's going to be two in Left on Mortal Flesh, which is out next year. And then they're going to sort of combine into the fourth Sam Spelunky book, which is Sam Spelunky Dark Justice, when the vampires come back and we learn more about the vampire world. And there's so much there to try and cram it all into one novel. It'd be stupid. it would be overfed, it'd be bloated. So the idea of using the short stories means I can get all the back history out the way and then just concentrate on the story when I get there.
That's a good plan, definitely. with talking about short stories, you are currently adapting one of them into a play. Which one is it, and how did it come about, and how are you finding it? I mean, that's completely different to your normal output. How are you finding it?
I've never ever written play scripts since like O level English many moons ago, and I find the idea quite terrifying. The one I'm adapting is Teeth, which is sort of my favourite story in O Taste and See. It's about this guy, who rich guy, is a successful businessman, goes out, gets his dentures and gets implants, but then the dentures decide to take revenge on him. And I've thought about having a go at a play, and I thought, well, which one would work? I thought, well, this would work really well, because you can just sort of use very minimalist sort of stage, a little bit of subtle lighting here and there, for sort of like you've got bedroom scene, you've got dream scene, and you've got dentist room scene. And you could just like use a chair for the dentist, plain bed, and you need some dark curtains for this, like this marionette, which is basically haunting his dreams. And my son is actually an actor. He works for a company called After Dark Theatre Company. My local, and they're fantastic. They do also like quirky murder mysteries. And he's off at Kendall College doing his usual thing there. And he's got loads of sort of like good young talent. And I'd love to see them do something like this, because it could be very, very visual. A lot of the stuff I work when I'm very much thinking sort of like, I have the video screen in my head, as it were. I was once told, well, you might like your writing for film. And that was actually used as a term of abuse. But I don't see that as abuse. I think that's a good thing, because I like people to be able to visualize what I'm writing as almost like a film or a movie or a TV or a play. Because if they can visualize it, then I'm getting across that description well. I'm getting the story across well. And the idea, so going back to the play, is that, well, perhaps I can take it that one step further and just go at the play. At the moment, I'm bouncing around in my head how I want to visualize it and how I'm going to sort of like lay it out act by act. And then hopefully in a couple of weeks' time, I will get down and actually get something down on paper. It's on my to-do list. My to-do list will be one day, and I say, oh yeah, I've got to get around to doing that now. Because you know me, my memory is just awful. If I don't have a to-do list, I just forget. It's terrible. My wife's laughing in the background. So, yeah, it should be fun.
That's good. What I've always thought is with like hard-boiled fiction, it makes great radio play material.
Yeah.
And Sam Spilucci would be a great audiobook. Have you ever thought about doing that?
I have, but it's time and it's practicality. I mean, one, I couldn't read it because I get my tongue tied so often. We'll be finding somebody else to do it, and I'm so completely painfully retentive. I'd say, no, you do it like that, do it like this. And we'd end up having an argument, and it wouldn't work because I'm terrible like that. But give it time, probably will do, because again, the idea is like, certainly case book, and the ones with the shorter cases rather than the uber lengths, yeah, like Ghosts, they would work very well in that sort of format. And I have been asked for them before. So they will come eventually. I think it's just a case of the opportunity will present. I actually had somebody ask me the other day if I fancy doing a graphic novel. That would be really cool. I'd really like to do something like that, especially with the vampire stories. They would work really well graphic novel for. But again, that might be in the pipeline.
Excellent. What do you find inspires you to as a writer? Who inspires you as a writer?
Oh gosh, that's a biggie.
It is a biggie. I have really to ask you.
There's all sorts of things. I mean, I'm a big fan of films. I love films. I mean, Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Sergio Leone's, the spaghetti westerns and Blade Runner, that sort of thing. They're always there at the back of my mind. You're writing for that like film audience, and that gives me almost like the canvas to work. What I'm aiming for, but sort of like day-to-day inspiration. It's just anything really. You get like little random conversations you have with people, and things you see in the street. It's like there's a character in the Sam Spilucci books called Boombox Betty, who's she's sort of like very smartly dressed woman who looks like a normal office worker, but she stands on a street corner just dancing to a boombox all day long, and that's what she does, and drives the guy who has the burger car mental. Now, she is actually based on a real person. When I was growing up in Wellingborough, there was a woman who used to stand in the market square there just like Betty, and she would dance and dance and dance every day, 7 days a week. That's all she did.
What kind of music was it, if you don't mind me asking? Do you remember
Normally ABBA. It was upbeat. She was there doing the dancing queen, you know, hands in the air. And people just stand around and watch. And she never had the piss taken out of her. She never got any abuse. People just said, yeah, she's cool. You know, that's what she does. And, you know, I like people like that.
Yeah.
They're what colour the world.
Exactly.
You know, you have too many grey people out there who's like downtrodden and depressed and conform, because that's what you're seen to do. The people who make this world an interesting place are the people who are different.
Yeah.
And the more differences we have, happier world it'll be.
Yeah, I agree. The eccentric people make it go around. We have a couple in Wolverhampton. We have but he used to be known as the cowboy. And he was the full cowboy. He just used to walk around all day saying, how are you doing, man? To all the women and that. But then he recently changed his style, and he became this cap wearing, I think he's trying to fit in with the kids, but he's completely sort of, you know, lost his, well, I don't want to say credibility. we have another guy who walks around, he's known as the Elvis. He looks nothing like Elvis apart from the quiff, and sometimes he'll wear a sparkly top. But he's the Elvis, and nobody takes the mick out of it. Everybody loves these people. Like you said, it's those people that sort of brighten someone's day, and it's you know, just their eccentricity. Do you ever struggle for things to write? I say writer's block, but do you ever sit down and just draw a blank?
I'm never short of ideas. I sometimes find the execution of it hard because I think, well, this is exactly what I want to do.
Yeah.
But it sounds a bit sort of like weird, and how am I going to do it? It's like in Shadows of Lancaster, I've sort of like halfway through the second story, The Bondage of Banshee. Well, the one I've written before that is the case of the grotesque graffiti, and is basically about the grotesque coming down off one of the roofs of the cathedral in Lancaster, and he was doing graffiti around the place. And I got to the point where I thought, hang on, that's wrong. I can't do that, because I've got to have Sam take it onto the roof of the cathedral, and it's a pitched roof, and it just doesn't work. I've written this wretched story, and it doesn't work. So I'm then going around all the other churches in Lancaster, which one's got a flat roof? And I found one. So I saved the story, but you just think, well, you know, sometimes things get in the way. Yeah. And when I've been working on Bondage Loving Banshee, things have been getting in the way. It's like real life, because I've been doing other stuff out of life. And you sit down and say, right, I've got to reread what I did like a week ago before I write at least a page today. And it's that's like the mundane things in life can get in and stop you. They get in the way, and you end up like trying to type about your hero in chained to a bed with this woman screaming, turn electricity up while she's doing it. And you're thinking, I forgot somewhere about something. Oh, God, no, what am I thinking about piping now? That's just wrong. No, you know, it must be something to do with the manacles, you know, something like that.
The clinking, you know, of the clinking of the chain. Yeah. No, life gets in the way, doesn't it? do you have any weird habits when you're writing? Not like, you know, taking off your clothes, running around the block three times, but just general things you like to adhere to.
It's a walk. When I'm thinking of an idea, before I can get it down onto like the screen or whatever, I have to walk lots because I find that clears my head. Because I do suffer from many ears disease, which means I have countless voices and noises going off in my head, and you just have to shut the hell up sometimes. You know, everybody wants you to line up. I'll listen to you later, but I'm working on a story now. So I'll go and I'll either walk around the house, I'll go for a walk around the block, or I'll just like just have to do something to disconnect from what I'm actually doing until I get that sort of that stillness. And then when I've got the stillness, then the story comes. I don't do distractions. I have to be completely off in my own little world. Phone goes, I just ignore it. Also, I throw it out the window if it keeps going, that sort of thing. I get very cross and angry at that. But I need that stillness. And so I'll have music going on. I'll have incense burning. And my mind has to be in the right place. And then I go, and that's it, I'm off. I will write all day. And I just went, oh my God, I'll get the tea ready. People are going to starve when I get home. That's my thing. I need that stillness.
Yeah, I find that walking the dog's always helpful, especially if you've got a dog.
Yeah.
Helps. But that's it. That's when I know that's my thinking and contemplating. Is there any subject, as an author, is there anything that you would never write about? Anything that you would consider a little bit too taboo to write about? Or do you think everything's fair game in fiction?
Stuff to do with children. I started reading Black House, the Stephen King, Peter Straub book some years ago. And because I really enjoyed Talisman, read that as a kid. And I got to the scene quite near the beginning where I had the body of a child there. And it never bothered me before. But then so like my own kids come along. And I just found it really, really distressing.
Yeah.
And I just sort of like couldn't finish the book. To this day, I've not read it. I'll probably go back to it at some point. But I couldn't write about hurting children.
Yes.
And that's in a really, really dark for the story. Yeah. You know, the story would lead me to that point, and if it had to be done, I would traumatize over it greatly, but I would do it because the story would require it.
Yeah.
If the story's there and it has to be told, then it has to be told. But I would find it very traumatic and very upsetting, and there'd be much gnashing and wailing of teeth and probably quite a few tears and hugging of the kids after I did it. Because children are precious. They are our future, as we both know, mate.
Yeah, and do you think that, like I say, stems from actually being a father and, you know,
yeah.
Things would be different if you know, you weren't, and I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the stuff I write now, there are echoes of what I wrote when I was young and single, but there's stuff there which is a lot darker. You know, I mean, my health wasn't so good. Many years wasn't controlled, so you know, a little bit off in cloud cuckoo land from time to time. Poetry, you always, you know, in cuckoo land when you start writing poetry.
I find myself there sometimes. I'm terrible at poetry. I'm no good limerick when I hear one. I want to talk about the new digital world of publishing and how things have changed. How do you find that the publishing industry, and particularly your own work, is getting out there now that that everything's shifted and it's digital seems to be the way forward?
Yeah, I mean, as most people know, I'm completely independently published. I publish myself. Because basically, I don't trust publishers. I have horrors, nightmares that, you know, I would approach a publisher, get signed into this sort of contract, and then they'd start me to want to change what I do.
Yeah.
And I don't want to change what I do because I know what I'm going to do, and I know that it will work. And the sales back that up. But the sales I'm getting mostly are literally from me getting out there myself, going around to Comic Cons, Fantasy Cons, Horror Cons, Writers Festivals, and saying, this is me, this is my work, this is my product, have a read, see what you feel. You know, it's like, pick a page, any page, have a read. If you like it, it's like your wand calling to you. You'll enjoy the book.
Yeah.
And then that seems to work. People need to engage with the author to see that they like the author before they'll pick up the book and have a read of the book.
Yeah.
If I was just like publish my book through CreateSpace and sit and say, wait for the big bucks to come back, you know, I'm going to be 80 before I make a pound. It's not going to work. You've got to get out there and people see your product. And at some point, I might sort of like decide I want to go down more mainstream publishing, but it's got to be somebody, if I find someone who I know I like and I can trust.
It's that mutual trust. It's that mutual trust with publishers. Publisher that steps in and just takes over everything and tries to change, you know, very important parts of the story. That, you know, if you wanted to do that, why didn't you write it? You know what I mean? It's but there are good publishers out there, but research. A lot of research. I was going to say, I mean, we've done some conventions together and some panels and that, and it's there and like you say, meeting the people, meeting potential readers and putting the book in their hand. The people who tend to just, like you say, whack it on Kindle for 99p and sit back expecting to become the next Stephen King. It's just not doesn't happen. Not anymore.
I'm part of going out people. It's part of the fun.
Yeah.
You know, because they're our characters themselves.
Are you still there? I'm getting a little bit break.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Kind
of. All right.
There we go.
That's me screaming.
I tend to like throw a Wilhelm scream in every now and then. Just, you don't hear that noise enough.
Get someone in a red shirt and throw them off a high building.
Do you ever, I stopped doing this. Do you ever read your own reviews?
Oh, God.
How do you deal with the negative ones, if there are any negative ones?
On Amazon, whichever I'm feeling depressed and I've had too much to drink, I go and have a read and have a damn good shout at it. Because it goes on, I picked up this book at a convention being told it's an urban fantasy novel regarding the history of Lancaster. This is not a historical novel. There are no historical comments. Not a history book. What are you expecting? I mean, vampires and werewolves do not exist as far as I'm aware. You know, it's a bit of fun.
Exactly.
You know, this person obviously got completely wrong end of the stick, or just likes going around and likes the sound of their own fingers typing on the keyboard.
Yeah.
And you're going to get negative reviews. You know, what you write is not going to be for everybody.
No.
I don't mind the negative review as long as it's somebody who's understood what I've actually been writing about.
Yeah, I think that's
if somebody's waffling on about their own ego, it's like you want to hack into Amazon. Find their email account, go around the house and punch them.
Yeah. Well, this is it. You're not allowed to do that for some reason. But somebody posted a review the other day and said something along the lines of, I'm paraphrasing. I found this book in my ex-girlfriend, haven't read it. Well, you gave it a 1-star, haven't read it, but if you ask my girlfriend, see what she thinks of it, otherwise... And he just went on like that, and he was like, you took your time out of your day to really piss on this author's parade. He might have been terrible, it might have been brilliant, it might have been Anne Rice, it might have been, you know, but he must have still been sort of stewing over the fact that it was his ex-girlfriend's book. And this is what the problem is, I think, with Amazon reviews, which is why I stopped reading them a long time ago. It's, you always get that one person who will just go on there and just have a vent, and it's not constructive.
Yeah, I think I mentioned as well when we were at Bristol, how many reviews would be genuine as well. You know, when you've got and you also put five star.
Yes.
You think, come on.
Yeah. No, I don't. When a book's got like hundreds of 5-star reviews and you know very little in the middle, or you know, I tend to pay more attention to books that have got some 3 stars and some 2 stars and some, you know, otherwise you know it is just friends and family. Somebody complained the other day that I saw that their mother's review had been removed by Amazon because it was family. And it was like, she really enjoyed the book. And I'm like, yeah, but still, it's like playing the national lottery. If, you know, your dad's just drawn the balls out, you know. It's allowed. Anyway, back on track. While we're on the subject of things that are annoying, is there what really annoys you in life? It can be anything. I always ask this question. It's quite fun.
I'm a grumpy old man. I'll pick up.
That's what I thought I'd ask you this one.
Politician. It is not to be politics.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we vote. Look at Palpatine. He was this lovely, lovely man, and he ends up with the Death Star. And again, nobody ever puts the Hamlet, you know, Claudius, my cuddly uncle, murdered the father. All the same. I'm probably going to kill a few off in the next book.
If you put David Panhead Cameron on first, I think you will get a lot of new readers. The election was a bit of a nightmare. It was. I did my bit, but apparently there are 2 people out there whose opinions were slightly different, and never mind.
Lancaster's a funny one for that, actually, because we've just gone from Conservative to Labour as far as MPs are concerned.
Right.
What we have as our sort of like, you know, your MP doesn't reflect what we had in the local elections, because we've got quite a high green constituency of, you know, councillors.
Yes.
And the mayor who's just been, you know, appointed today is actually a green mayor. So it'd be interesting how that runs. Yep. So we do have this strange mix, because Lancaster, you've got the city, but then you've got all the rural area around, which got a lot more money, and they're normally the true blue. But it's weird. I'm not quite sure how the election got the way it did this year for us. I think Labour are just a little bit more aggressive in their campaigning, whereas people, on the whole, really wanted Green, but they didn't. They couldn't vote for Green MP, because then the Conservatives would get back in. So they just voted Green as far as the council was concerned, and so we got a Green council. But hey-ho, that's just by the by. I'll just drink more whiskey and ignore a lot of them.
We've got Labour again around our local thing, but it doesn't make a difference when Lord Joffrey's in charge, does it? Some of the best books you've read this year, maybe last year as well, because you know, it's still quite early.
Oh, Dexter. Definitely. Jeff Lindsay. My kids have got me into the TV series. They said, you've got to watch this. So I started watching it earlier on this year and fell in love with it. I've just finished season 2.
Yeah.
And I discovered, obviously, there are books which it was vaguely based on. And I've read the first 2 books, and they are so good. Again, it's this inner monologue. And it's weird, because I've actually found somebody who has a very similar writing style to me for once, because my writing style is quite different, because it's quirky, and I don't know the way to describe it. If you say describe your writing style, so I go, oh, it's that film noir meets Douglas Adams with sort of like or whatever.
Yeah.
And Jeff Lindsay seems to be very similar, because obviously Dexter, you got to like the guy,
yeah,
and you're rooting for the guy. And it just works, and his detail and his characters. Any book which has good characters, I love. The plot can go to hell in a handbag, as long as I can identify with the characters.
Yeah.
You know, I'll read it just for the characters. I mean, I've just been reading a book recently where it wasn't working because the characters were quite two-dimensional, and I didn't know who they were. So I've actually had to stop reading the book halfway through, and I might come back to it later. But the book I've just picked up, which I'm reading, is One Shot, which was the Reacher, not the film with Tom Cruise in it, the Lee Child one. And I've got through like 100 pages in an hour. I can't put it down because the characters just work. Not much has happened. Yeah. You know, we're only up to about the first 5 minutes of the film so far, but you're into 100 pages. And care because you're just loving these actors. Yeah. It draws you in, it absorbs you, and you're really starting to visualize what's going on. Again, you've got that sort of like that cinematic image going on in your head. And it's not just the cinematic image, which is the film. The book is being quite different, and you can see that coming across because you can visualize the characters, you can visualize what's going on. So yeah, any book which has got good characters immediately wins me over.
Yeah, if there was any character that you could have possibly conceived and written about from another author, who do you wish you'd have created as a character?
And then Stephen King's Flag, definitely.
Oh, Randall Flag.
He is the ultimate badass buddy. He's cool.
He is, definitely.
And I hated the way he was killed. I just felt he had such a pathetic death, you know, and his face sucked by this creature. I mean, I suppose that's the whole idea. You know, he built himself up as this huge, powerful being, and he had a feeble end in the end. I can see why he did it, but I'd love to have gone in with a bit more gore and a bit more blood and guns blazing and all sorts.
Yeah,
I just grew the character.
Yeah, he deserved better, really. I think Stephen King at the moment he's sort of taking himself away from that and doing more stuff, more grounded in a way, with his hard, hard case crime stuff.
Yeah, I read Tales from the Buick A couple of years ago, and that was the last one I read, I think. And it was okay. I mean, it was well written, but it didn't grab me. I did not like how he ended the Dark Tower, the final battle with the Crimson King.
Yeah.
I just felt like he was fighting Father Christmas. Yeah, you had Father Christmas on the top of the Dark Tower throwing sort of like snowballs almost. It was pathetic. I've grown up on Stephen King, and I was waiting for this big climax, you know, your big uber bad, you know, there should have been dramatic music, there should have been a throne, there should have been, you know, cackling and wailing in the background, and it wasn't, it was Santa Claus.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
It was a long journey he took us on through the 7 books, and then, like you say.
And he said, oh, by the way, it's starting again. You know, I'm going to take him right back to benefit. Yeah, okay, I could probably go with that, but...
Yeah.
Cheated. Cheated.
Yeah.
You know, I would be there with my sledgehammer, right?
A lot of people felt like that, really. I actually like Roland as a character. I think that'd be... he's a good character. Say in about 15 years' time, 20 years' time, and you thought, it's time to, you know, I've lived a life, I know what I've, you know, what I've got to say. What would be the title of your autobiography?
How the bloody hell did I get here? Or probably like, what's my name again? How old am I would be a good one, because that's a normal one I come out with. How old am I? I was fine, because I was born in 1970, so I always knew that my age was sort of like the last number in the year, so in 1971, I was 1. 1980, I was 10. And then sort of like when I got to 30, it just seemed to go wrong because we hit 2000. Yeah. And since 2000, I've never been able to remember how old I am. So I spent from 2000 through to 2010 choosing what age I wanted to be. 1 year, I was 30. Next year, I was 70. I thought it was great to be 70 because you can sit on the sofa, wet yourself, nobody cares, and you can speak gibberish. Next year, I decided to be 2. Because, again, you could sit on the sofa, wet yourself, speak gibberish, and nobody cared. Next year, I was 13, because you'd be stroppy and just get away with it and just go and sulk in your room and listen to music. And so it went on. But then I sort of calmed down a bit when I hit 40. And now I'm just, like, I keep forgetting again. So I'm probably going to be 40 for the rest of my life. But it's like, how old am I? That might be a good one for me.
Yeah, I've been stuck at 31 now for the last 3 years. I'm quite enjoying it. what's next in the pipeline for Austin Chambers? What can people look forward to?
Right, well, I've got a load of signings coming up for the rest of the year. So if people want to have a look at my website, www.aschambers.co.uk, or on Twitter and Facebook, Pinterest, and all the usual things. Links are on the website. They can find those. But literary-wise, I'm in the middle of writing Sam Spilucci Shadows of Lancaster, which is third in the Sam Spilucci series. It's going to have 5 cases in it, just like Casebook did, because with Sam, I'm sort of alternating. So, like, small cases, big case, small cases, big case.
Yeah.
Because Casebook was 5 cases, Ghosts was 1 uber case. So I'm working on that, and I'm about a quarter of the way through. There's going to be things like the case of the Grotesque Graffiti, case of the Bondage-Loving Banshee, case of the Marauding Mummies of Morecambe. That's going to be a good one, where they nick the statue of Eric Morecambe, which is actually based on real events from last year. And there will be case of Parental Purgatory and the case of the Singing Seer, which is going to be based around a character which you've already met in Sam Spilucci books. That hopefully should be out before Christmas, which would be rather nice to sell a few books before Christmas. I might have to afford some Christmas presents there. And then beginning of next year, we're going to have my next short story compilation, which is not all things Dark and Lovers this year, Let All Mortal Flesh. And that will conclude the vampire short stories arc, which I'm doing at the moment. I am planning a story to give some more hints as to who Kanor might be. This mysterious figure who's lurking in the background is supposed to be bringing out this divergence. I've actually got a short story in there with this guy who's having the same dreams that Sam is having about the dragons and the constructs rising from the ground and angels. And I think there's some heavy hints as to who he might be. But then after that, in end of 2016, it will be a book I'm really looking forward to, which is Sam Spilucci, Dark Justice, which is, like I say, I mentioned earlier, going to bring the vampires back to Lancaster. And that includes Dave, Nightingale, Marcus. It'll have Scorpion and Tigress, the 2 vampires from Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And more importantly, I'm going to bring Justice, the vampire, into Lancaster, who's my gunslinger from the Justice story. So, yeah, I'm keeping busy, mate. Keeping busy.
Plenty on. Fantastic. So anybody who's listening and wants to go and catch up before all of that comes out, head over to the usual places and pick up a copy of any of your books, really. Start at the beginning with the Sam Spilucci series, and then you'll know what's happening by next year. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise,
Austin.
Mate.
It's always a pleasure. Stick around a second. I'll talk to you after the thing. Next week, we come back with Duncan Bradshaw, who's going to be joining us to chat about writing. And, you know, there'll be plenty of general merriment and lots of fun. So join us then. And I've been Adam Millard, slightly croaky. And I'm off for a hot bath. And I'll speak to you next week.
I'm not like you, I just fuck up. Come on, motherfucker, everybody has to die. People equal shit.